Let's go ahead and get going with another week of our 4.5 year verse-by-verse journey through all of God's inspired word by turning back to the book of Exodus, chapter number 22. We're going to pick up our story in verse number 7. Moses is talking with God on Mount Sinai on the day of Pentecost, 50 days after Israel left Egypt. This is right after God delivered his Ten Commandments to Israel there at Mount Sinai, and they begged Moses to go up and get more information from God on his own because they didn't want to hear from God anymore because he was scary. And so Moses, I believe, is kind of going through a whole bunch of what ifs or whatabouts or supposes regarding how people interact with one another. And so we've seen matters of capital punishment. We've seen matters of restitution. We've seen matters of retribution. And now we are ready to talk about what happens when you loan things out. And so Exodus 22, verse number 7. If a man gives to his neighbor money or goods to keep safe, and it's stolen from the man's house. So you got a buddy, lives next door to you. You say, hey, you know what? I'm going to go away for a while. Could you watch my stuff for me? I'm going to bring it over and you keep it safe at your house. So that's the scenario. And then it gets stolen from the buddy's house. Well, if the thief is found, he shall pay double. That's the norm. Remember, if he gets busted with the material, he has to give the material back plus an equivalent amount of material. If he doesn't have it, he's already sold it to somebody else, then he's going to end up paying 5 or 4 times as much. But anyway, that should be the resolution of it, right? Because the original owner gets his stuff back plus a little bit of extra. Verse number 8, if the thief is not found, the owner of the house shall come near to God to show whether or not he has put his hand to his neighbor's property. So basically, there is no thief found. And so the man whose house was broken into has to stand before God and swear an oath, I'm not the thief. There really was a break-in. I didn't take my friend's stuff. Verse number 9, for every breach of trust, whether it is for an ox, for a donkey, for a sheep, for a cloak, or any kind of lost thing of which one says, well, this is it. The case of both parties shall come before God. The one whom God condemns shall pay double to his neighbor. All right, so this kind of goes into that same sort of neighbors arguing with one another about whether or not they've stolen something from them. Suppose the neighbor says, hey, that's my sheep. That's my sheep that went missing, or that's my sheep that you said was stolen. That's mine. That belongs to me. Then what happens is they have to go before God, which means they basically are going to the priests who are acting as judges. And the priests are going to make inquiry to God as to who's in the right, who's in the wrong. And once that determination is made, then the one who is considered guilty ends up paying double to the other person. And so everybody needs to behave themselves and treat each their neighbors fairly. That's the whole point of this. Because if you don't, you may end up paying a lot more. Verse number 10. If a man gives to his neighbor a donkey or an ox or a sheep or any beast to keep safe, and it dies or is injured or it's driven away without anyone seeing it. All right, so now we're back to the scenario that a neighbor has been entrusted with something in this case, it's a living something, and it goes missing. And we don't know where it's at. Verse 11, an oath by the Lord shall be between them both to see whether or not he has put his hand to his neighbor's property. The owner shall accept the oath, and he shall not make restitution. So we're back to the idea of they have to go before God. They have to have the priests engaged who act as judges. And the person has to swear before God, I didn't steal it. I didn't sell it. It just disappeared. I don't know what happened to it. And so the one whose property went missing has to accept that. That their neighbor is telling the truth before God. Because the idea is you don't use God's name in vain, remember. But if it turns out that it was stolen from him, meaning the neighbor really did sell it or was planning on keeping it for himself, if it was stolen from him, he shall make restitution to its owner. And based on the things we've seen before, if he still has it, he has to give it back plus another of equal value. If he got rid of it, then he has to pay back five times as much for the large animal, like an ox, and four times as much for a smaller animal, like a sheep. Verse 13, what if it was attacked and killed? If it is torn by beasts, let him bring it as evidence. So bring the corpse, bring whatever you can find, and show, this is what happened to it. It was killed by a wild animal. He shall not make restitution for what has been torn. So basically, it was an accident. And so the person can't be held responsible for a wild animal attack. Now, I'm going to make a caveat to that. Remember, judges are going to be looking at these cases one by one. If the person who was supposed to be taking care of the animal was negligent, didn't have it pinned up properly, then yes, there might be a judgment that they have to pay something back. But if it was just a wild animal attack, you know, the animal was in the stable and a cougar jumped the fence and attacked it and dragged it over the fence and away into the wild, then that's not on the person who was taking care of it. That was just one of those things that happens. Verse 14, if a man borrows anything of his neighbor and it is injured or dies, the owner not being with it, he shall make full restitution. So, hey, George, my neighbor, can I borrow your donkey? Oh, sure, go ahead, use it. Bring it back in one piece, though. But he doesn't bring it back in one piece. He hurts it. He ends up getting it killed. Then guess what? The borrower has to pay back the owner of the animal. It has to be either healed so that it's back up working properly, or has to be replaced by an animal of equal value if it can't work for the guy anymore. And you can see how this could be related to things we do today. You borrow your neighbor's skill saw and you break it. Well, you need to replace it. You break the blade. You need to replace the blade because you're borrowing it. And you should be able to give it back to the person in the manner in which you received it from them. Verse 15. Now, if the owner was with it, meaning the owner was actually loaning the services of his donkey and was right there helping. So if the owner was with it, he shall not make restitution. If it was hired, it came for its hiring fees. So basically, if the owner is there, then the owner is responsible for anything that happens to their animal. Even though the neighbor is borrowing its services, the owner is overseeing the process. And so anything untoward happens, it's on them. And the same thing if the neighbor says, hey, can I borrow your donkey for $20 today? Then it is assumed that the $20 includes kind of some insurance that if anything bad happens, I've already paid you for that. And so that's what the text says here, is that that's included in the hiring fee. Verse number 16, off to another topic. And this one, I have heard people really get crazy with this one. And so let's make sure we understand it properly. If a man seduces a virgin who is not betrothed and lies with her. Now, that does not describe a rape. Let's make it very clear. What we're talking about here is two people having sexual activity together of their own free will. Sure, the guy might have sweet-talked her, but it's still of her own free will. And so this is not a rape, because a rape is a capital crime. And that comes up later. So if a man seduces an unmarried woman who is not engaged, she is not in sort of a contract for marriage, and they end up having sexual activity together, then they get busted, they get found out, he shall give the bride price for her and make her his wife. So effectively, he will do what is right and appropriate, pay the dowry to her family on her behalf, and they will get married. Because apparently, that's what they were wanting to be anyway. And this is exactly the circumstance that I told you is described in the story of Jacob's daughter Dinah and Shechem, where they were engaged in sexual activity before any type of marriage, before any type of betrothal. And so what happens is a dowry is extended and a marriage is planned, because they just kind of jumped the gun on their relationship. All right, so that was what was to be done in the case of, let's just say, a couple of teenagers that got carried away with themselves. But remember, in this culture, it was the whole family that was kind of involved in marriages. So in verse 17, if her father, and presumably her mom, utterly refuses to give her to him. So there is no way in the world my girl is going to get married to that boy. Then the boy, or his family, shall pay money equal to the bride price for virgins. Meaning, he still has to pay the dowry, because you know what? They had sexual relations. And that is part of marriage. And he should have given a dowry before engaging in such behavior. And so that is forfeit, because dad won't allow the marriage to happen. But the money still has to be paid, because she needs that money to live the rest of her life. Verse number 18. Oh, by the way, that should, by the way, have some sort of chilling effect on getting the cart before the horse, shall we say, of having sexual activity outside of marriage without having some sort of dowry in place. Verse number 18. Big shift of topic here. You shall not permit a sorceress to live. Now, a sorceress is, it's a feminine form, and I think it's feminine here because the majority who engaged in this activity tended to be female. But the same would be true for a male engaging in this behavior. A sorceress is someone who engages in activity intended to pierce the spirit world barrier, to try to get in to the hidden dimension and access information and power that is supposed to be off limits to human beings. In the Greek text, the word is pharmakeia. That's its base word. And you recognize that word as the base for pharmacy, because the way that a lot of these sorcerers and sorceresses did their work was to get in an altered state of consciousness by the use of special drugs like magic mushrooms, peyote, marijuana, heroin. You know, now I'm given some of the more modern ideas, but you understand the situation. Things that alter the mind and make it more sensitive and accessible to the spirit world. And it's totally inappropriate. Believers are not supposed to be monkeying around in the spirit world. It's a dangerous neighborhood. You never know who you're going to run into out there. That's where the fallen angels live. That's where the demonic forces have their hangouts. And so anybody that trades in that sort of activity was to be put under the capital punishment within the land of Israel, because it was just so dangerous. Verse number 19. Whoever lies with an animal shall be put to death. This is the term bestiality, having sexual engagement with an animal. It is an aberration. It is an abomination of God's design. One man, one woman, together for a lifetime. And that includes the sexual component of their relationship. And so, no. Animals, no, 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 no. Not appropriate. And so it also carried a capital punishment in Israel. Verse 20. Whoever sacrifices to any god other than he who is alone shall be devoted to destruction, which is another way of describing capital punishment. Now you remember the Ten Commandments start with, you will not have any other gods beside me. You will not make images of gods and goddesses to bow down to them. You will not take my name in vain, because I'm the only God. And so here is God saying, in my country, in my kingdom, anybody that shows allegiance to a fake God, a fake deity, they're engaging in being a traitor. And so being a traitor carries a capital punishment penalty. Verse 21, on to another topic. You shall not wrong a sojourner or oppress him, for you were sojourners in the land of Egypt. So here's a little reminder that you're supposed to be looking out for the other person. It's not all about you. The Ten Commandments included this idea of respect for other people. Respect for human beings being made in the image of God. Well, here's the reminder that just because they're not an Israeli doesn't mean that you can do anything to them that you want. They're still a human being. So they're visiting your country. You still treat them fairly. And if you don't, I will take an account of that. And so I think this is a good reminder for all of us here in our country that even the people who might be here illegally, without documentation, they still need to be treated as human beings. Verse number 22. You shall not mistreat any widow or fatherless child. We're basically talking about people who have little power. People living in a country that's not theirs, they don't have very much power. A widow who's lost her husband, she doesn't have an awful lot of power. An orphan doesn't have any power. And God says, don't you mistreat the powerless. Verse 23, if you do mistreat them, and they cry out to me, you know, basically saying, why, God? Why is this happening? It's not right. Then I will surely hear their cry, and my wrath will burn, and I will kill you with the sword, and your wives shall become widows, and your children fatherless. Now, instantly, we went to a much more generic application here that will show up in later texts that God basically says, if you guys don't behave yourselves, then I will eventually come down hard on the entire nation. So if you don't have kindness towards sojourners, I'll kick you out of this country into another country. You'll be the sojourner. If you end up abusing widows and orphans, I will let foreign powers come in and attack you, and you'll end up with a whole bunch of widows and orphans in your country. Verse 25. If you lend money to any of my people with you who is poor, you shall not be like a moneylender to him, and you shall not exact interest from him. Now, this gets touched on several different places, so we have no doubt what it means. It means if you are aware of a neighbor, a relative, a friend who has fallen on hard times through no fault of their own, and they need a little assistance, and you've got the wherewithal to help them with that, then you give them that money without interest. Yeah, sure, you can say, hey, pay me back when you get a chance, but you can't make them pay for the use of that money. That's called usury, a fee charged to use someone else's money. And so God says, don't you dare do that to your fellow Israelis. Now, here's another situation you might run into when somebody's on hard times. Verse 26, if ever you take your neighbor's cloak in pledge, meaning your neighbor owes you some money and they're working on paying it back, and so they give you something of value in order to make it clear that they intend to pay you back, then if the only thing they had to give you is the clothes off their back, meaning their cloak, which is basically their outer layer of clothing. Think of like a jacket or a big bulky coat, okay? So if you ever take your neighbor's cloak in a pledge, you shall return it to him before the sun goes down. So every day he's working for you. At the end of the workday, you say, okay, here's the cloak that you've been giving me, you know, as a promise that you'll get me paid back. I'll see you tomorrow. So you give it back to him at the end of each day. for that is his only covering, and it is his cloak for his body. In what else shall he sleep? Meaning, just think about it. You know, think about the fact that he's working on paying you back. Don't make his life more miserable by keeping his pledge of his clothing at your office, locked in a closet or something, while he's out there shivering in the cold before he comes back to the work again for you the next day. That's just not right. So it's another example of do unto others as you would have them do unto you. And God warns, if he cries out to me, I will hear, for I am compassionate. So God reminds everybody, keep thinking about other people as being made in the image and likeness of God, and treat them accordingly. Treat them respectfully. Treat them with mercy. Treat them with kindness. Treat them with dignity. Treat them like you'd want to be treated. Because if you don't, I'll take that in consideration with how I deal with you. So remember in the Sermon on the Mount, Jesus said, blessed are the merciful, for what? They shall receive mercy. So we need to keep all of this in mind. Well, we've got one last verse before we close up today. Verse 28, you shall not revile God. That's a big duh. Not a good idea to talk God down. Nor curse a ruler of your people. We shouldn't be talking smack about those who are in leadership. We can critique them, but we should not be abusive in how we talk about them. And you know what? Because of the time, I'll just set this up. This verse is actually quoted by the Apostle Paul as part of an apology for where he, in his own frustration, crosses the line. Come back next time, and I'll take you to that place in the Word.